Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Hi, friends. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Welcome to Bayou to Beltway. Today we're talking to two distinguished citizens of the area who are both interested in poverty and in outcomes for children. The first is Mr. John Newman. Mr. Newman was born in Niagara Falls, grew up in Rochester, New York, currently leads New Hope Community Development Ministry, otherwise known as New Hope. He's been doing that since 2011, working with under-resourced kids in North Lafayette. He's also the president of an organization of a number of organizations. It's kind of a pan organization. It's called LAPESC, member organization. So it's a parish educational
Lafayette Public Education Stakeholders Council.
Lafayette Public Education Stakeholders Council. Thank you so much, John. We're also joined by Dean Bobby DeQueer. She was raised in New Iberia, went to public schools, and then came to USL at the time, where she got a bachelor's in communication and then a master's in organizational communication, finally a doctorate in applied language and sciences. So she has been at UL for a long time. And she is currently serving a very important position, Dean of University College. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good morning. Great to be here.
The Lafayette Parish Public Education Stakeholders Council is a mouthful. So I'm going to say LAPESC. Mm. Is that okay?
That's wonderful.
Is organizing a number of forums and educational gatherings that are focused on schools and on educating people about the challenges that are faced by schools and by children in Lafayette Parish. What is LAPESC and what are the forums that are coming up?
LAPESC is a organization of organizations. There's 14 organizations that participate in LAPESC. Some of those include the Lafayette Parish School System, 100 Black Men, One Acadiana, our local Chamber of Commerce, Pew Family Foundation, the 705 Group United Way, and the university itself. And beginning of this year, we decided that we would work on three initiatives together, our 14 different organizations. The first initiative we worked on was the Love Our Schools initiative that just happened this August. All 14 of our organizations participated and joined in with the Love Our Schools work in the end of August. So then we have two other initiatives we're working on. One is we're showing a movie on September 17th. At the ACA, Acadiana Center for the Arts. The movie's called Resilience, and that's a history and documentary on ACEs, the research that was done on ACEs, and how ACEs affect children. And ACEs is an acronym for Adverse Childhood Experiences. So we wanted to show that movie because many people aren't aware that there are a lot of outside factors that affect how kids do in school. And ACEs is a significant one. And then the last thing we decided to do is to have a school board candidates forum, and that's going to be Monday, September 23rd at the ACA building at 7 p.m. We think that if public education is important, then it's also important that we get well-informed, good candidates on the school board. And so we want the public to come to that and introduce them to our school board candidates so they can make informed decisions when they vote for school board.
Will the school board candidates be coming to this forum? You already signed them up. They're going to be there. Will people be able to interact with them or hear what they have to say?
Yeah, there'll be a few general questions that will be asked of all of the candidates. And I think we've gotten a pretty good response. All the contested seats for school board, I believe all the candidates will be there for that. So if you are in a district that has contested seats, that'll be a great time for you to hear what your candidate has to say. And then after the general questions, then there will be a meet and greet time afterwards where you can sit down individually and talk with the candidate, get to know them, their positions, and what their vision is for our school.
Now, a number of your organizations, I'm looking, Concerned Citizens for Good Government, Greater Southwest Black Chamber of Commerce, Pew Family Foundation, those aren't necessarily always involved with education specifically or with ACE, but they've joined together. Why is education an important issue, and should we be concerned? Is education a continuing issue for development in this region or for our community?
Yeah, well, so some of the organizations are directly involved in public education. Some of them are involved because they're concerned on issues on the north side of Lafayette, which tends to have a high concentration of poverty, which impacts academic performance of the kids. So, yeah, we do need to be concerned because as we have challenges in the oil and gas industry, we're going to need other industries to come into Lafayette. And one of the things that industries look for, big companies are looking for, they're looking for public education, their school performance. So if we want new businesses to want to come here, we need to have a good, strong public education system. So that's one of the reasons why One Acadiana is involved. Education is important for business. You need an educated workforce.
Good point.
And you need an educated workforce, and you also need to be able to have citizens that can take the jobs for those companies that are coming in. So you need an educated populace for that. And we find that, you know, when we talk about economic development in Louisiana, some of the first things that are talked about are, you know, the fact that our schools are suffering, that we have lots of schools that are performing way below what they should, and especially in our communities that are high poverty communities.
What is the connection between poverty and performance in education or performance in schools?
Well, there's a huge connection. We were talking earlier when you think about middle and higher income kids coming in with language that exceeds a child that has been born into poverty. Those children come into the school ready to learn. Kids from low income backgrounds, and I don't want to make a blanket or a generalized statement, but for the most part, those kids come in with less language. And in many cases, they're seen from a deficit perspective rather than from what they bring into the classroom. So knowing that and then having programs and resources in place to affect change there are highly important if these children are going to be successful in that arena.
So can we make we oftentimes look at school scores and how kids do and who's scoring mastery or proficient or advanced and so on. So can you go back and kind of correlate that with poverty measures?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the high-stakes testings that go on in the school system, basically it's set up to work with kids or test kids that have had some resources prior to coming to school. In Louisiana, we do have early childhood programs that I think will eventually make a change there. We have Head Start, and what we found with Head Start, that kids aren't sustaining what they've learned in the Head Start programs for whatever reasons when the big study was done on Head Start. And I have a lot of ideas about why that might be so. None of it empirical, however, so it's hard assessments. But I think that, certainly education in that sector is important if we're going to make change for children that live and of course, don't thrive in those environments. And how are we going to affect change in the school system is the question that we have to answer.
Just to add to what Bobby has said here, Dr. DeQueer said, there's no other factor, single factor, more closely associated or correlated with how a child's going to do in school than the socioeconomic status of their parents. No single factor more closely associated. And that's not just true in Louisiana, that's true nationally. So, and the correspondence is pretty tight. So how I became interested in this is that when my wife and I started New Hope in 2011, we have five children of our own. Three of our kids have already graduated, two are in college now. Education has been a big part of our family. When we started New Hope to work with kids in the North Side, help them with their education, what we saw were tremendous gaps. We saw our first year we had two fourth graders who were supposed to be working on long division. They did not know their addition facts. We had a second grader that could not read his spelling words. He could not pronounce them. It took him 20 minutes to pronounce 20 spelling words. We also saw behaviors that sort of surprised us. My wife had been a children's pastor. She had taught in a private Christian school. We saw kids who had trouble sitting still. who their legs are bouncing, their pens are tapping, they have trouble focusing. And then what we saw, like on the playground, I would identify now is fight or flight syndrome, that there were a lot of fights on the playground, high tension, and we didn't understand what was going on. And a lot of that were those were ACEs. The kids were under chronic stress. And if you're in a fight or flight mode, it's difficult to learn.
Well, why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
What's the relationship between stress and achievement in schools? Or chronic stress or ACEs, the measure, which is a measure. And can you talk a little bit about the measure, the ACE
measure?
Sure,
sure. ACEs is used, it's used to determine childhood trauma, right? And it's they actually identify 10 factors that describe childhood trauma. And it's across three categories of abuse, neglect, or household dysfunctions. What's important about knowing about ACEs is the fact that this can permanently affect the way a person is going to behave in the future and, of course, children in the classroom. So it can affect their physical, their mental, their emotional, and their financial health over time. The more toxic, and when I'm saying toxic, the more ACEs, the score. There's a score from 1 to 10. Maybe I should say that first. So the higher the score, the higher the chances of a negative outcome. It's even been associated, if you have a score of 1, it says that you are twice as likely, you can be twice as likely to become an alcoholic. A score of 4 says that you have high trauma in your life. 7 is extremely high trauma, and that has been correlated with early death, so as much as 20 years.
Let's just give a little definition of this. So an example of what would build up a score would be, for example, do you have a family member that's an alcoholic? Were you forced to move because of poverty? You couldn't pay the rent? Did your parents get divorced? Was your housing unstable? Was there violence in the household? So each one of those is a question that's asked. And then if you answer yes to those questions, you start to gain numbers. So you're a 1, you're a 2, you're a 3, you're a 4. And the way it works is, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that as you get higher and higher ACE score, you're really getting into territory where it's very, very hard for children in that category to really focus on school and focus on learning and get some of those things that they need. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
We are talking today to Dean Bobby DeQueer and Mr. John Newman, and we about ACEs and about poverty and its effect, and also about some forums that are going to take place here in Lafayette Parish. So we're going to talk some more when we return.
KRVS listeners are proud of their communities, schools, businesses, and homes. They care about where they live and improving their lives. Are these listeners your customers? They should be. Sponsor programming on KRVS. Call 337-482-1437.
Arriving at Radiolab, a full immersion curiosity joyride.
What?
Wow.
No.
Yes.
It was like,
your body jumps?
Jumps and jumps. It's not smooth.
It's 11 million miles an hour.
Chup, chup, chup.
Splat. It was like,
what is wrong with you?
That's Radiolab, coming up Wednesday night at 9 on KRVS.
Hello and welcome back to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. We're joined today by Mr. John Newman and Dean Bobby DeQueer. And we are talking about ACEs and poverty and its effects on children's outcomes, educational and otherwise. As we went, we were talking about the different measures of ACE. So make the connection for me. So as you answer more and more to those questions about growing up in a household subject to abuse, neglect, or deficits in that household, either reading or language or whatever, outcomes are worse for you in school. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. As the ACEs increase, the negative outcomes, there's a correlation to the negative outcomes increasing. So the first thing is that chronic stress actually alters the brain development. So your short-term working memory, its efficiency declines. That's the first thing you start seeing. As you get several ACEs, two or three ACEs, you start seeing social, emotional, and cognitive impairment. So it's more difficult to learn. You're going to see social behaviors that aren't acceptable. Then when you start getting three or four ACEs, then you start seeing people adopting risky behaviors, joining gangs, doing drugs, teenage sex, those kind of things. And when you start getting six ACEs, then you've really won the trifecta. Then you're looking at disease, disability, and then, as Dr. DeQueers pointed out, at six ACEs, your life expectancy is cut by about 20 years.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So normally you think of having four ACEs as a really good thing, but
in the card game,
but in the game of life, having four or five, six ACEs is a terrible thing and can lead to a shorter and less productive life. So thinking about kids with high ACE scores in the school system, what needs to be done? What can Lafayette Parish, LaPesque, UL Lafayette do to kind of address that need?
Well, I can talk just as a practitioner. So when we started New Hope, we focused on education and having the kids learn phonics and learning their math tables and their math facts. And what we didn't realize is we were actually adding another layer of stress to our kids. And so the behaviors actually got worse. And then when we started doing research on ACEs, what we realized what their kids really needed was a safe, loving environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we started doing that, and when we started emphasizing relationships, safety, helping our mentors listen to the kids feeling important and valued, what we saw were behaviors changed not only at New Hope, but their grades for behavioral conduct at school improved. And so we started seeing 95% of our kids getting A's and B's in conduct at school, not just at New Hope. So relationships and kids feeling loved and safe, that's a strong mitigator for ACEs.
I mean, when you think about it, that's the thrust of education, right? We're talking about both the cognitive and affective issues that affect children. So the tendency when we think about schooling is to deal with the cognitive first. But if those affective things are not dealt with, you know, and we talked earlier about Maslow's theory of hierarchy, that if your need for safety, love, good and nurturing relationships aren't met, that child or that adult will never reach full potential or self-actualization. And that's what's going on. So an awareness of the fact that we have children coming into our classrooms with a variety of perhaps childhood trauma, what kinds of things can we do to make sure that we affect change there? And really, awareness is a big part of it. Having the school principals, the administrators, the teachers, and even parents aware of how this can affect their child. And I think we're seeing that more in the educational sector right now. It's been in the mental health sector for a while. We all know what PTSD is, right? And that, in fact, is very similar to what we're talking about. So awareness is key.
So from a teacher or administrator standpoint, when you see a kid who's acting out or a kid who's not learning or a kid who's not paying attention, the shift is not to say, oh, well, that's a bad kid. The shift is then to ask yourself some questions. So why not? Is that kid experienced something in their life that makes it hard for them to do that? So it's moving more to a therapeutic kind of sense. You know, this discussion we've had makes some sense to me in terms of voucher students. You know, one of the things, voucher people who use the voucher system in Louisiana have very high satisfaction reports. You know, when you ask them about it, they say it's great. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes they've moved from a very low performing public school to a very low performed private school. And educators and people like me are going, well, why would your satisfaction be really good? But you've raised an issue here, and that's safety and feeling protected and being part of a community that's nurturing may make all the difference.
Absolutely.
I want to ask Dean DeQueer a question about poverty and focusing on poverty and ACEs in your work, what do you think for college administrators such as yourself working in the area that you work in? What's a perception of ACEs issues and what do you bring to your work?
Absolutely. I see it all the time because I see students practically every day who come in and may be presenting with problems in the classroom, you know, not doing well and wanting to come back to school. They've been on suspension. And as we talk, I tend to delve, be a little bit intrusive, and find out what's going on with them. And in many cases, students are looking for someone to talk to. So I'm there for them. I'll talk with them. But of course, I know that we have resources on campus that are probably better equipped to handle some of the things that they're going through. And so then I refer them to counseling and testing, where they can get involved with a counselor. They can become involved in groups. So I think as administrators and professors on this campus, we just have to be aware that, you know, we're in the business of developing people, right? So if you see someone in your classroom not demonstrating what we'd want a professional to demonstrate, then it becomes incumbent upon us to ask that student, pull them aside. Is there something that I can help you with? You seem to be disengaged. You're not coming to class. You don't have to be a social worker to do this.
From my professional experience as a teacher, I noticed that when students don't do well in my class, it's almost never because they intellectually cannot do well. It's always because, oh, I have a boyfriend who's violent. I've lost my house. My mother kicked me out. There's always something along those lines, and it really points to this.
Yes.
That it's not just the idea of an intellectual deficit. And also with these young kids, I think they say that if you're a child in a stable home of two college-educated people, you're going to hear 30 million words by the time you're three or four, whereas if you're in a high-poverty household with maybe only one parent, you may only hear 3 or 4 million words.
Absolutely. The environment is not literacy-rich. And so, I mean, you learn from what you see modeled.
So what can listeners be aware of, and what can listeners do to kind of address this? Can you, in terms of moving forward, what kind of insights would you say for people to take? How can they support programs that address ACEs or seek to do? What can you do? I mean, this is an intractable issue, right, because we're talking about people's households.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say first, get informed. For whatever reason, ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, seems to be the best kept secret in America. I mean, this was a landmark research that was published in, what, 1997?
1995 through 1997, the two big waves of data collection happened.
Yeah, and I've gone and I've spoken to some education classes a few years back, and the kids in the education class hadn't heard about it yet, let alone the average person, you know, at the workplace, you know, parishioners in the pew, who's heard about this subject. So I think the first thing we can do is get informed. What is it? What causes it? Try to understand it. So come to our resilience showing on September 17th. Tickets will be available through the Acadiana Center for the Arts. And come, and after the movie, we're going to have a forum with two educators there who will be answering questions to give you more insights about ACEs. So the first step is to become informed.
And that forum, so the movie is called Resilience, and that's going to be on the 17th, and that's a story that will really introduce you to ACEs and its effects, and it's a really good movie. I've seen it. And then after that, we're going to have a forum. I'm going to moderate the forum, as I understand. And we're also going to have Margot Hasha, who is in the sociology department. Mm-hmm. And I think Alicia Griffin, who is a counselor at an area school, who comes in, is going to be quite familiar with the ACEs phenomena. And people will be able to get their questions answered. And this is a critical issue at this mm-hmm. point. I think somebody said that something like 70% of the children in Louisiana who attend public school fall into the either poverty or either partially or totally free school lunches, which means that they are not what we consider to be getting adequate funding to protect against some of these disorders.
Absolutely. And, you know, being aware, like John said, you know, awareness is key, being informed and recognizing that we are part of the solution. You don't have to be a social worker to recognize that a child has had an adverse childhood experience. And you don't necessarily have to do any of the counseling, but knowing where to send that child, where to get help
is
important.
This is a key to self-understanding, too, because I know I was desperate to take the test. I wanted to find out if I had any ACEs in my background, you know. And we, I think, are going to offer the audience on the 17th the ability to take the ACEs test and find out what their ACEs score is. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at that, you develop a little self-understanding. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes there's a tendency to blame ourselves for the way we are, you know. And I'm not suggesting that people evade responsibility, but if your father's in prison – you were raised in a house where there was violence with alcoholism and unstable. I mean, there are some very definite factors that predispose you to certain kinds of outcomes.
That's right. That's right. And knowing that, you know, can certainly help people to recognize their behavior. If it's not positive, you know, maybe there's something in the background you've been denying, or you think, oh, everybody's experienced this. I just got to get over it. And yeah, you do have to get over it, but there's a way to deal with it and some very positive ways to deal with it.
Go ahead, John.
Well, one thing to, after understanding ACEs a little bit, I would say, you know, after you go into the movie and understand it, I think one of the things you could advocate for would be early education for children. When you look at K-3, K-4 programs, one thing that could happen right away is they're put in a nurturing environment, but also their parents, many of them don't have the nurturing tools they need to be successful parents. They just have the tools in the toolbox that their parents gave them. And so a lot of times with early education, you can connect that with parental education that's going to help these parents working with their own kids.
Yes, parenting workshops, also home visits would be good. We did do that when I was at PCARD. We had a home visiting program over at Alice Boucher that worked very well. So absolutely, John, you're right. Families sometimes just don't have the wherewithal to handle all that's going on in the family, and we're responsible. One of the things that I said earlier was that Head Start is very good at engaging families. I don't know what happens. That's something that we looked at PCARD also. We looked at why when the kids went to regular school after Head Start, the parents weren't as engaged. Head Start is really good at engaging the parents. So we've got to find a way to engage these parents.
To enlist parents in their children's education. And, of course, that goes back to the resources that we're providing at that level. So if you're working, you know, a full-time job and you're a single parent and you have kids that are young, I mean, you're in a very, very tough situation.
Absolutely. Because, you know, when you look at it, if you're in a low-paying job, what we found is that those jobs tend to be very punitive in nature when it came to those parents having to take time off to go just to parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah, and heaven forbid, you know, so you go to a parent-teacher conference, you miss your job, you get fired, and then your housing's insecure. It's just like
right.
This awful cascade of...
It's a catch-22,
oh,
isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's remind people of what's going on. September 17th at Acadiana Center for the Arts, there's going to be a forum. We're going to show a film called Resilience, and then followed by a moderated panel with experts talking about ACEs. And then on September 23rd, which is a Monday night, there's going to be a school forum where people will be able to meet people who are running for the school board and maybe get involved with the local school system. We've been talking this morning with Mr. John Newman from New Hope Ministries and Dean Bobby DeQuier from the University College. Thanks so much for coming in and sharing your news with us.
Absolutely.
We enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you for having us.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
on the next Radio Lab.
When somebody has a brain injury and commits a crime, who do we blame?
Was it the person's fault, or was it something about his brain?
I did idiotic things that I couldn't stop myself from doing.
My brain made me do it.
Because I have these neurological problems.
We're just going to say, you're blameworthy.
I looked into his eyes, and it was like a soul in hell.
I didn't want to do it.
Blame. That's on the next Radio Lab.
Coming up tonight at 9 on KRVS.
This is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, streaming live at krvs.org.